The buzz cut, the shock-white eyebrow, the ugly boulder of a head. Zoe had not just let him live. She had let him escape. She couldn't pull her eyes away, even when she tasted bile in the back of her throat. Baldino began hammering her with questions now.
Can you confirm that you took this photo last night? Can you confirm that you took it outside the former residence of Bertram and Elizabeth Wallace?
Zoe felt dizzy. Only Vilkomerson noticed. He put a gentle hand on her arm and said something she couldn't quite process. Everything was sliding. Everything was flying sideways. And Baldino wouldn't shut up.
We know that this man here is Stan Mangold, he said. The truck was stolen, but we ran his prints, and it turns out he's wanted by the state of Virginia for a whole bunch of nasty stuff. What we don't know is who the other man in the picture is, the one with the tattoos. We ran the image through our database and came up empty. So why don't you stop wasting our time and tell us who he is?
I don't know, said Zoe.
Do you know if he was involved in the murder of Bertram and Betty Wallace?
He wasn't involved, no way.
How can you know that if you don't even know who he is?
I just know.
How about you tell us everything else you just know about him?
I told you. I don't even know his name. Baldino grunted. He was sure she was lying.
You want to sit here all night, Miss Bissell? He said. I don't. But I will.
I'm telling you the truth, Zoe said. He came out of the woods, and then he went back into the woods. I didn't say two words to him. I don't know who he is.
Then why have you been lying to protect him?
Zoe was close to tears now. She looked to her mother. Her mother stood up.
This is totally unacceptable, she told Baldino. You're harassing a girl who's talking to you of her own free will. You think because I do yoga, I can't find a lawyer who will kick your ass?
In the silence that followed, there was a racket on the stairs. It sounded like a prisoner with a ball and chain. Everybody turned. It was Jonah, looking horribly betrayed. His fingertips were covered with band-aids. His right ankle was dragging a skateboard on a piece of purple yarn. Baldino shook his head and said, quietly for once, and to no one in particular,
"These people are not normal."
Jonah told the police everything, because, as Zoe feared, he'd seen everything. He had woken up on Bert and Betty's couch. He had shouted for Zoe. When she didn't answer, he'd wiped the window with a cold little hand and peered outside. Now Jonah was sitting on Zoe's lap at the table and pointing at the Instagram.
"That's Stan," he said. "He said his last name was The Man, but he maybe made that up, so you should check."
Jonah stopped for a second. "I threw a rock at him," he said, then looked at his mother uncertainly.
"I'm sorry."
"It's okay just this once," she said. "Your dad introduced me to Stan many years ago, sweetie, way before you kids were born, and I wanted to throw a rock at him, too."
"What else can you tell us, son?" Vilkomerson said.
"Stan was mean,"
Jonah said, his voice breaking for the first time.
"He hurt Bert and Betty, and he tried to hurt my dogs. I don't know why. This other person in the picture? The kind of naked one? I don't know his name, but he's magic, and he saved them. He also made the ice get all orange like that."
When Jonah finished speaking, everyone let his words settle. No one spoke, except for Officer Mayers, who said,
"Seriously, it's a filter."
Baldino turned back to Zoe.
"Young lady, can you corroborate any of what your brother is saying?"
"I can corroborate all of it," she said. Did he think she didn't know what the word meant?
"Interesting,"
said Baldino, the patronizing edge creeping back into his voice.
Even the part about the magic?
Especially the part about the magic. Chief Baldino announced that he was sick of being lied to, of being trifled with by a damn teenager, and soon he and his men were driving off into the night. The Bissells watched from the front door until darkness swallowed the squad car a quarter of a mile down the road. Zoe's mom asked her and Jonah to follow her out to the garage.
"There's some mess we have to clean up," she said.
"Now?" said Zoe. It was 4 in the morning.
"Now," said her mother.
"I hate raccoons," said Zoe. Her mother seemed not to have heard her. She probably hadn't slept in 24 hours. But at length, she responded.
"Hmm?" she said.
"Yeah, I hate them too." The garage stood on the other side of the circular drive. Zoe had lived on this plot of ground her whole life, but it still amazed her that it could be so quiet. Deep space, science fiction quiet. When it was nighttime, and there wasn't a wind. Silence, her mother liked to say, could heal you or it could make you crazy. It all depended on how you listened to it. Zoe couldn't tell what the silence would do to her tonight.
"Why'd you tell me to shut up when I said the thing about the cops not going to get Dad's body?" she asked her mother.
"First of all," her mother told her, "I would never tell you to shut up because those are uncool words. But nothing good's going to come from stirring everything up now. The police didn't do their job. End of story." Zoe let it go, and they trudged along some more. "I know you think we were lying about what happened with Stan," she said as they crossed the drive.
"We weren't, Mom,"
Jonah interrupted. He had stopped to stab holes in the snow with a stick.
"We weren't lying at all."
"Of course you weren't, sweetie," said Zoe's mom.
"Stan really did hurt Bert and Betty," he said. "And the magic man really did save Spock and Uhura."
"Of course he did, sweetie."
Zoe was annoyed by the way she was just yesing him. She fell behind to walk with her brother, who was still hacking at the snow like it was his enemy.
"Can you not?" she told him.
"The snow is dead. You killed it. You win."
She loved Jonah, even during his weird outbursts. She felt it strongly now. She wished the night could have bound them even closer to their mother. And for a while, it seemed as if it would. Now her mom was floating away from them, looking up at the stars like Zoe and Jonah weren't even there.
"We didn't lie, Mom,"
said Jonah, trying to reel her back in.
"We didn't."
"Just drop it, Jonah," Zoe said. "It's not important that Mom believes us, because we believe us." They were 20 feet from the garage, and only now was it taking shape in the darkness, like the bow of a ship approaching through fog. It was a shingled shed built for 2 cars and divided down the middle by a thin wall. Jonah was strong enough to open the doors all by himself. He rushed forward delightedly.
"Which one?"
he asked his mother.
"The one on the right," she said. "But let me do it, please."
The carport on the left held her mother's silver Subaru Forester. Zoe's car, a heinous old red Taurus that she referred to as the struggle buggy, used to be parked on the right. But Zoe had let Jonah convert her side of the garage into a mini skate park so he could practice year-round. Her brother had installed a quarter pipe and a rail, and covered the walls with posters that said, "Shred till you're dead," and "Grind on it." Zoe's mom let out a sigh that made a cloud of vapor in the air. She asked Jonah to step back. Jonah wasn't happy about it. He stamped his feet in the snow like an impatient horse. But he did. Zoe stood by her brother, his partner in pouting. From inside the garage, she could hear scratching and scrabbling. She pulled Jonah even farther away, prepared for the raccoons to come tearing out. They were nasty animals.
She picked up a snow shovel that was leaning against the garage and gripped it like a baseball bat. Zoe's mother reached down to open the door, then stopped and turned to them.
"I do believe you guys," she said. "I'm sorry if it seemed like I didn't."
She appeared to have more to say, but she opened the door before continuing. It swung up with a metallic groan.
"Later, I want to hear all about the Magic Man," her mother said. "But right now..."
Zoe saw a dark figure huddled on the floor of the garage. The figure turned to her, his face damp and beautiful and as pale as chalk.
"Right now," her mother said, "you've got to help me get him inside."
Part 2. A Binding of Fates. 4. X heard a flurry of noises outside the garage. Voices. The rustling of clothes. Boots in the snow. The door rose with a shivery screech, and the wind rushed in around him. He felt feverish, nauseated, depleted. Every sound was like a detonation in his head. He looked up and saw three figures approaching in a funnel of light. It was the girl from the lake and her brother. A woman stood in front, shielding them. Their mother, surely. X winced and closed his eyes, as if it would make them disappear. He wasn't afraid that they would do him harm. He was afraid they'd try to save him. X knew he couldn't be saved. Bounty hunters like him were just glorified prisoners, and they were bound by laws. He had been reckless. He had trampled on every one of them. The most ancient commandment was none must know, meaning that mortals could never learn of the lowlands' existence. It could never be more than a story they told one another, a legend about a lake of fire they called hell. They could never have proof. That way the living could be judged on how they behaved when they thought there would be no consequences. Bounty hunters were never to be seen by anyone but their prey. They were to strike quickly, in shadows and in silence. X had put himself on parade. He'd spoken to the girl. He'd carried her and her brother through the Stark Woods. Worst of all, he had let the soul he'd been sent to collect escape into the trees, like a virus gone airborne. Had a bounty hunter ever failed to return with the soul the lords had sent him for? Had a bounty hunter ever refused to do his duty? X had never heard of such an outrage, until he had committed it himself. And why had he been so weak? Why had he let Stan vanish into the hills? Because the girl had wanted him to. No, there could be no saving him now. The fever that racked his body was called the trembling. It was his punishment, and it had only just begun. A day earlier, X had lain entombed in his cell in the lowlands, a wholly different pain just beginning to stir. He didn't know if it was day or night. He never did. For the prison was plunged deep in the earth, like a tumor. He'd been trying to sleep for hours. He lay on his side, curled like a question mark on the rocky floor, when the ever-present bruises beneath his eyes began to burn. He ignored it at first, desperate for rest. But the pain grew until it was as if his face was on fire. It was a sign, a signal. One of the lords would come for him soon and force him to capture some new soul. X had heard stories about a higher power that ruled the lowlands, but the lords were the most ferocious creatures he'd ever encountered. There were both men and women in their number, and they'd once been prisoners themselves. Now they were a race unto themselves. They wore golden bands that lay tight around their throats, and vivid cloaks that flashed in the gloom. Like the prisoners they ruled over, X knew of only one exception. The lords did not age. The ones who had been damned when they were young remained young forever. Often they were gorgeous and stately. The oldest, however, were a walking nightmare. X sometimes saw the elders stalking around the lowlands, hissing and howling and sharpening their curling talons on the rocks. Some had long gray hair that rippled down their backs and bony hands that pulsed with veins as fat as worms. When X looked at their faces, he could see their skulls trying to press through. He wondered which lord would come for him now, and to which corner of the earth he would be sent. X must have drifted off. He woke up shouting. The prisoner in the cell to his right, who was known as Banger, had overheard the exclamation.
"Bad dream, dude?"
he said.
"Heard you freaking out."
The souls were forbidden from knowing each other's true names. And Banger had earned his nickname in the simplest way possible, by beating his forehead on the floor to ease his mental anguish. Banger had been a bartender in Phoenix. It wasn't long ago that, in a fit of rage, he had stabbed a patron in a bar. Then he'd fled to South America, abandoning his wife and 4-year-old daughter. Banger was 27 when X hauled him to the lowlands. Now, he would be 27 for all eternity. The lords didn't allow the guards to beat the prisoners, because they knew the prisoners found pain a welcome distraction. Banger, and many souls besides him, did violence to themselves instead. X walked to the door of his cell and peered down the corridor, hoping a guard would quiet his neighbor. The nearest one, a giant Russian with a lame foot who wore a blue tracksuit and aviator sunglasses for no reason whatsoever, was 30 yards away.
"You heard not a word," X told Banger.
"For I spoke not a word." A third voice joined their conversation without warning.
"Dissembler, dissembler, dissembler."
It was Ripper, who occupied the cell to X's left. To distract herself from her own searing thoughts, Ripper ripped her fingernails from their beds, then waited impatiently for them to grow so she could wrench them out once more. Back in the 19th century, in London, she had watched one of her servants spill soup onto the lap of a dinner guest. She'd stood up from her chair, followed the young woman to the kitchen, and killed her with a single blow of a boiling tea kettle. Afterward, she instructed 2 footmen to deposit the servant's body on the cobblestones behind the house. She knew the police would be too intimidated by her wealth to question her. Ripper had been 36 for nearly 200 years. Many of X's fellow prisoners were wretched men and women whose souls had been transported to the lowlands when they died. A small number, like Banger and Ripper, had been snatched out of their lives by bounty hunters when earthly justice failed to punish them. Ripper was now pacing in her cell and loudly reciting a poem from her youth.
"Deceiver, dissembler, your trousers are alight. From what pole or gallows shall they dangle in the night?"
She was a beautiful, formidable woman. She had trained X to be a bounty hunter, and dozens of others as well. Lately, however, she seemed separated from insanity by the width of a dime. X glanced down the corridor again. The Russian guard had heard Ripper ranting, and was on his way, dragging his left foot behind him. Banger hissed at Ripper.
"Jesus, Rip, shut it, would you?"
"But he is a deceiver. I heard his exclamation as well."
"Okay, fine," said Banger. "But chill the hell out. And by the way, the real version of that thing is liar, liar, pants on fire, hang them from a telephone wire. Just saying."
This caused Ripper to cackle.
"Yes, of course," she said. "I shall alert Mr. William Blake to his error the next time we meet."
The Russian arrived and poked his club through the bars of Ripper's cell.
"Why sexy lady talk so much?" he said. "Must shut mouth."
I already warned her, dude, said Banger. I'm on it.
The guard shuffled over to Banger's cell.
I am not needing assistance of dung beetle like you, he said. Please to shut up also.
Or what? Said Banger. You gonna hit me?
Oh, that's right. You can't. Because your job sucks.
Do you even get health care?
You obviously don't get dental.
If anyone is to be struck, it should be moi, Ripper interjected. I must insist, I really must.
The guard cursed, then shuffled back to Ripper's cell. After a furtive look around, he gave her a quick jab with his club. She was cooing with pleasure when he limped away.
Nothing for me?
Banger called after him.
Niet, said the guard. Because you are jackass.
Silence reigned a while. X lay back on the rocky ground, the bones of his face still glowing with pain. Just as his heart had begun to settle, he heard Banger's annoying whisper.
Talk to me, man, he said. Tell me your life story. I'll tell you mine.
X fought back a wave of anger. He had no desire to talk. He spoke harshly to snuff out the conversation.
Banger, your story is well known to me, he said. Do you forget that it was I who conveyed you to this place? Or that it was I who trained you to be a bounty hunter just as Ripper trained me? I know your crimes only too well. Hearing them again would only disgust me.
Jeez, said Banger. Way to be a dick.
When it was quiet again, X closed his eyes, already regretting his outburst. He had collected 14 souls for the Lords of the Lowlands, and Banger was by no means the worst of them. But X hated telling his story. It only reminded him of the injustices of his life. X had committed no crime. He was an innocent. Unlike every other soul he'd ever encountered, he did not know why he had been condemned. He did not know what outrage he had supposedly committed, or even how or when he might have committed it. But rather than making him feel pure, X's confusion only convinced him that there was something vile and corrupt in his heart that he would one day discover. The pain beneath his eyes was excruciating now. It was time. Even Banger knew it. He was standing at the bars of his cell, gazing out.
You got company, stud, he said.
X looked through the bars, his heart like a drum. A lord had leaped from the stony plain and was hurtling at him through the air. The prisoners were forbidden from knowing the lord's names as well. But the personage who swept into X's cell now had a royal, African bearing, and was quietly referred to as Regent, out of respect for his proud posture, his great height, and his shining ebony skin. X lay on his back, readying for the ritual that was to come. Regent came and towered above him, the golden band around his throat, and the brilliant blue of his robe shimmering in the darkness. He lowered his hand over X's face like a mask, and began intoning a speech X had heard many times before.
The Lowlands require another soul for its collection, he intoned. He is an evil man, unrepentant and unpunished. I bring you his hateful name. Will you receive this name, and will you bring the man to me on his knees?
I will, said X.
Will you defend the secrecy of our world all the while? Will you defend the ancient, inviolable wall between the living and the dead, just as bounty hunters have defended it since before time was even scratched in stone? Said Regent.
I will, said X.
The Lord gripped X's face harder with his taloned hand. X's skull seemed to ignite. The pain coursed down his neck, traversed his shoulders, and so on until it had consumed him entirely. He could not breathe.
He knew from the 14 previous occasions that the terror would pass, yet he could not prevent himself from bucking and kicking. The Lord's hand pressed down harder still. But X did not think Regent cruel. Even as the Lord held him fast, he stroked X's hair paternally with his other hand, taking care that his nails did not lacerate X's skin. Soon something behind X's eyes burst like a dam, and he saw nothing but an overpowering whiteness. When he retrieved his senses, he found himself in the overworld, on a mountain, in a blizzard. Regent had set a man's sins swimming in X's veins. X was like a dog who'd been given the scent of his prey. Now he could hunt. The man's name was a boring little brick. Stan. It wasn't just Stan's story that rushed through X's blood, but also the story of everyone whose lives he had infected. There was an old couple called Bert and Betty. There was a boy lost in the woods without a coat or gloves. A pair of dogs. And a girl. X could have summoned her face and pictured it with perfect clarity, but he was careful not to. He merely glimpsed her out of the corner of his mind's eye and saw enough to know that she was too lovely, too fierce and full of hope, for him to recover from. 5. The girl hovered outside the garage now. She was just standing there, squinting at X and rubbing her nose, her hair askew from sleep. Yet he was so transfixed by her that everything in his body stopped. She had wavy, light brown hair that just barely grazed her shoulders. There was a dark beauty mark on her left cheekbone that drew attention to her eyes, which were wide and glinting, and seemed to change from blue to gray even as X looked at her. He turned away and coughed savagely. Stan's sins had been polluting his body ever since Regent set them loose in his bloodstream. Now that X had let Stan go free, the pain had intensified. The trembling was the Lord's way of ensuring that the bounty hunters would follow orders and return to the lowlands with their prey. X had never suffered like this before, because he'd never refused his duty before. Still, he knew that his misery, the fever, the pain, the delirium, would only increase unless he renewed his search for Stan. Even if X could endure his sickness, the Lords would send another bounty hunter after him, or maybe Regent himself would arrive, seething and bent on vengeance. When his coughing subsided, X turned back to the girl and her family. The mother was holding her children at a safe distance. Still, the boy managed to break free and rushed at him. X's body stiffened reflexively. No one ever approached him unless they meant to do him harm. But the boy only wanted to hug him and to whisper, "You saved my dogs!" He embraced X so tightly that X gasped. "Stop it, you're hurting him," said the girl. "And you're being weird." "Step away from him, Jonah," said the mother. The boy did as he was told. The mother peered around the garage. "My God, it's hot in here," she said. "How is that possible?" X had warmed the air with a simple rubbing together of his hands. Seeing the mother's concern, he made a circular motion with his palm, and the garage was frigid again in an instant. "Wow," said the mother, even more alarmed than before. "Amazing," said the boy. The girl said nothing. She hadn't stepped any closer. Was she afraid? Disgusted? X couldn't blame her. He was repulsive even to himself. He saw her notice the bruises beneath his eyes, then look quickly away. Shame radiated through him. He wished that she and her family would flee. He wished they would burn the garage down around him. He did not want to bind their fate to his. Now that he had betrayed the Lords, He was a body in free fall, gaining momentum as he fell. X touched the boy's back gently to let him know that he had not hurt him. He stole another look at the girl, afraid he would see horror in her eyes. Instead, he saw a soft expression that he could not identify. Was that what pity looked like? He managed to speak, which came as a surprise even to himself. He said four words with as much force as he could muster.
"Leave me. Protect yourselves."
Then, so quietly it was as if he were speaking to himself, he said two more.
"Jonah. Zoe."
He began to lose consciousness then, and darkness poured in from every side. He heard one last exchange. The boy said in wonderment, "He knows our names, Mom. How does he know our names?" And the mother answered, though it was not truly an answer, but an exhausted kind of prayer,
"I just wish I knew what I was bringing into my house."
It took Zoe and her family 10 minutes to devise a plan for ferrying X inside. As he waited, he drifted in and out of consciousness, like a boat that couldn't decide whether to sink or float. Each time he came to, he begged them to abandon him. He could not make them understand the dangers. Finally, Jonah and his mother left to fetch something from the house. X and Zoe were alone. Even in his fever, X could feel the awkwardness of the moment. He felt Zoe's eyes flit over his face again. His hair, his lips, his eyes. And again he was ashamed to think how he must look to her. He'd seen others like her from a distance before, and they'd never stirred anything in him. But Zoe, he could feel her gaze on him even when he turned away. Even when his eyes were closed, her face gave off such warmth that it was a kind of light. No amount of horror or hatred could make an impression on X anymore. But loveliness and kindness laid him flat.
"Who are you?
What are you?" said Zoe, after an agonizing silence. She paused and laughed to herself. "Do you skateboard?"
"Do I?"
"Sorry," she said. "I have a blurting problem." Again, the awkwardness was everywhere. X wanted so badly to speak to her, to make her comfortable, to let her see something in him that was not wretched.
"I do not skateboard," he said.
She laughed for some reason, shook her head, and put her face in her hands. She stared out into the darkness to see if her mother and Jonah were on their way back. They were not.
"Zoe," said X,
wondering if he had the energy to speak the words swarming in his head.
"You must abandon me. I am not like you. You have seen what I am capable of, and creatures even more dangerous will come after me soon. They will demand that I recapture Stan, and they will destroy anyone whose shadow falls across their path. Zoe, truly, I can offer you nothing but peril."
She knelt by his side. The closer she came, the more his fever cooled. He had never experienced the phenomenon before. "You saved my brother and me," Zoe said. "And I can handle a little peril." She smiled faintly. "What's your name? I don't even know your name."
"I do not have one," he said.
"That's messed up," she said. "Okay, listen, whoever you are, we are not going to let you freeze to death out here. You helped Jonah and me when you didn't have to, and you didn't kill Stan when you could have. And that's when I saw what you are capable of."
"Zoe, I beseech you."
"No! There will be no beseeching." Her voice was stern now. He feared he had angered her, but saw that she was struggling with many emotions.
"My family's had a shit year," she said,
then stopped to gather herself.
You need not speak if it brings you pain, he said.
No. I want to, she said.
She started again, speaking slowly, carefully.
We've had a shit year.
There was nothing we could do about it.
But there is something we can do about you. So we're going to help you, no matter what you say, or how weirdly you say it.
X searched her mind to see if her will was as strong as it seemed. He moved slowly, feeling his way into her thoughts, like he was parting branches. Almost immediately, she shivered and shot him a warning look.
Stop it, she said. There will be no mind melding, or whatever that is. You have to promise. Not with me, or my family.
I give you my word, he said.
He added, he was not sure if he should.
And I have never been able to do it with anyone but you.
This seemed to surprise her, and she smiled. The awkwardness was lifting, dissipating like smoke.
What will you call me?
He said. I'll think of something, she said. The front door slammed in the distance. A dead sound with no echo. X turned to watch Jonah and his mother cross the drive. Jonah ran excitedly. He was carrying a round, red sled. He was holding it in front of him, like a shield. Together they pulled X to the house. With every bump and jolt, he arched his back in agony. Once inside, they maneuvered the sled through the kitchen, then the living room. Zoe and her mom tugged at the rope, while Jonah cleared the path and shouted frantic, sometimes contradictory, instructions. At the bottom of the staircase, they managed to get X to his feet, like a team of workers lifting a statue. Zoe and her mother held his arms to steady him, and Jonah shoved as hard as he could from behind to prevent him from toppling backward. After 5 nerve-wracking minutes, they reached the landing. Jonah wanted X to sleep in his room with him, and when his mother hesitated, he began chanting, "Sleep over! Sleep over! Sleep over!" In the end, it was decided that X would sleep in Jonah's bed, even though it was small and shaped like a ladybug. The Bissells would all share the floor. The mother didn't want her children alone with him. Zoe helped X onto the bed, putting a palm against his cheek to steady him. X closed his eyes to hide his surprise. His shirt had a rough V at the throat, and Zoe's right forefinger had landed on the patch of bare skin. For the next few moments, all he could feel, all he was aware of in the world, were the tiny movements of her hand as she inched her finger back onto cloth. X was still dizzy and weak. The moment Zoe took her hand away, he fell back onto the mattress with such a thud that the ladybug's antennae twitched. Zoe unlaced his boots and put them under the bed. When she went to hang his overcoat in a closet, he shook his head no. Zoe smiled. "Security blanket?" she said. X did not recognize the phrase, but he could tell there was kindness in it. Zoe placed her palm on X's chest again, avoiding his exposed skin so carefully that he felt her touch even more keenly than before, and said, with a strange kind of sweetness, "Good night, Moon." As she turned away, he reached out to touch her arm. Had he not been in a fog and half out of his senses, he'd never have had the nerve.
"Why endanger yourselves?" he said. "Why do all this for me?"
Zoe looked down at where his hand lightly gripped her. She gave him a smile, a trace of light in the darkness. "There's nothing good on TV," she said. Jonah fell asleep first and began battling someone or something in his dreams. Zoe's mom tossed on the floor a while. She gave a little yelp every time she rolled onto a toy that Jonah had left on the carpet, then slipped off as well, one arm draped lovingly over her son.
X lay quietly, unable to rest despite his exhaustion. He turned to face the window next to the bed. A frantic beetle was flitting back and forth between the panes of glass. Trapped forever, with the wide world in full view. X knew what it felt like to be that bug. For a moment, he allowed himself to imagine escaping the lowlands and living, truly living. He pictured himself with Zoe in the summertime when the world wasn't hardened by ice and swallowed in snow, when there was no trembling, no fear. He shook his head. The vision was ridiculous and dangerous, besides. The longer he resisted returning to the lowlands, the more he imperiled them all. Yet even the sound of Zoe's breathing in the darkness captivated him. It was nearly 5 in the morning now. They were the only ones left awake. Some protective instinct made it impossible for him to sleep before she did. So X and Zoe just lay there in the dark. He listened to her breathing, waiting for it to deepen and slow. And had the sensation, though he had a hard time trusting it, that she was listening to his. The blizzard had mauled Zoe's and Jonah's schools, and they had to be shut down for days. The flagpole at the high school had snapped in half and flown through the front doors like a missile. Half the windows on the northern side of the building had been shattered. All that remained of the glass was a rim of tiny, pointed shards that looked like vicious little teeth. Over at the elementary school, the classrooms were flooded with muddy water. Handwritten essays about climate change and drawings of horses floated through the hallways like lily pads. X had fallen into a sleep so long and unbroken it was nearly a coma, his chest rising and falling, his legs dangling off the end of the ladybug. He slept through most of Monday. He was only vaguely aware of the comings and goings downstairs. He heard voices. He heard cupboards squeaking open and clapping shut. He heard branches being dragged across the snow and tossed onto a pile. In the afternoon, a friend of Zoe's arrived in a truck thumping with music. X heard Zoe call him Dallas, but wasn't sure that was actually a name. Dallas had brought Zoe a coffee, which seemed to delight her. "Oh my God, does this have actual milk in it? Do not tell my mother." Still, she sent him away without letting him into the house. X knew that he himself was the reason, and he was just conscious enough to feel shame trickle through his chest. Hours later, he woke again. Another car engine, another friend. The sky was black, except for the fuzzy yellow lights of another town on the horizon. X's shirt was soaked with perspiration. This friend must have known Zoe well. She didn't bother to knock on the front door. She just strode into the front hall, calling her name. The instant Zoe tried to send her away, the friend said, "Why are you being weird? Gloria and I take 1 4-hour nap. Okay, it was 5 hours, shut up. And now you're dissing me? And by the way, what the hell was up with that insane Instagram? People are asking me about it." Even feverish and half asleep, X could feel Zoe grow tense. He heard a wooden step creak as she sat down. She didn't want her friend anywhere near X. She was blocking the stairs. "I'll tell you everything, Val," she said, finally. "But first tell me what you've heard." Val sighed. "I hate this game," she said. "Okay, I heard you solved the Wallace's murder, met a hot alien, and made the chief of police cry like a bitch." She paused. "Let's start with the alien."
"He's not an alien," said Zoe.
"I'm disappointed," said Val, "but go on."
"I met him during the storm," said Zoe. "He helped me and Jonah."
"And?" said Val. X didn't understand the question, but Zoe clearly did. She lowered her voice to a whisper, not knowing how keen X's hearing was.
"And he's so hot, I can't even,"
she said.
You can't even?
Said Val. They were giggling now.
I can't even begin to even, said Zoe.
Ask me about his shoulders. Ask me about his arms. I mean it. Pick a body part.
Okay, okay, I get it, said Val. Just because I think heterosexual sex is gross and immoral doesn't mean I don't understand what a hot guy is.
Zoe laughed. It's immoral now, too, she said.
Hello, overpopulation. Hello, world poverty, Val said. But I'm trying to be open-minded. Say more about the alien.
Still not an alien, said Zoe.
Still disappointed, said Val.
X sank back into sleep like someone pushed down into a river. He only half understood what he'd heard. He awoke only twice on Tuesday. The first time, Zoe propped his head up against a pillow and spooned broth into his mouth, saying gently,
Three more sips. Two more. One more. Come on, don't fight me.
The second time, she leaned over him with a glass of water and attempted to push something into his mouth. X was confused. He began to choke. Jonah, who had been playing with dinosaurs and wizards on the floor, looked up and said in a shocked voice,
He doesn't know how to use a straw?
Shut up, Jonah, Zoe said. Don't embarrass him. Now that he was under Zoe's care, X began to surface from dreams more regularly. The trembling had loosened its grip. Stan's sins flowed more quietly through his veins, though they never disappeared entirely. Sometimes he heard the Bissells wonder aloud about him when they thought he was sleeping. Was he from hell? Was that what he meant by the lowlands? Why was he sent there? What had he done? Was he alive? Was he undead? What were his superpowers and what were his weaknesses? These two last questions came from Jonah, who, as X's eyes fluttered open momentarily, had also crept close and asked if he was one of the Avengers. Zoe's mother suggested they all write their questions down on slips of paper and put them in a metal mixing bowl she had placed on the nightstand. When he had recovered, she said, she'd see to it that he answered them all. Now, even as he slept, X could sense the bowl beside him filling with paper. He dreaded answering the questions, and the dread crept into his dreams like a rising flood. He saw terrible images, a parade of every soul he had ever dragged to the lowlands. He saw the fear he inspired in his victims and, sometimes, even his own hands in a ring around their throats. X was certain that the more Zoe knew about him, the more repulsed she would be. He had only done what the Lords had commanded him to do. But he had done it. X finally had the strength to sit up on Wednesday morning. Zoe and the others were curled on the floor, still murmuring low in their sleep. The trembling should have forced X back to the lowlands by now, but, thanks to Zoe's presence, the pain was muted. He gazed out the window, hungry for air. The frozen river glinted at the bottom of the hill like a long, glowing ribbon. He went outdoors, and the frigid wind blasted away the last remnants of sleep. The sun was not yet visible, but it had sent a flood of orange and red across the sky to announce its arrival. X was grateful that the day was not yet bright. He had lived so long in a cell that his eyes were accustomed to darkness and to close quarters. He was most comfortable at this hour, when the world revealed itself slowly. X had been trained to ignore the beauty of the overworld. He had been taught to cast his eyes downward, or to stare straight ahead like a horse pulling a carriage. Any memories he formed here, not just of mountains and sky, but of the dogs nuzzling his face, or of Zoe placing her hand against his chest, would make him suffer all the more when he returned to the lowlands. And he would be forced to return. He couldn't let himself forget it.
the lords would eventually haul him back home. What terrified him was that he didn't know when or how, or what plague they would visit on Zoe's family for giving him shelter. X was weaving his way down the hill when he heard the door open behind him. He turned to see Zoe coming toward him. She had thrown on a coat and snowshoes, and her face wore a dark expression.
"Are you bailing on us?" she said.
"Bailing?" said X. "Leaving. Are you leaving?"
"No, I assure you I am not."
Zoe seemed not to believe him.
"Because enough people have left us already," she said. "And Jonah likes you.
You know who else was allowed to sleep in the ladybug? Nobody, ever."
"Zoe," he said. "I am merely testing my lungs."
He paused.
"Will you walk with me? I would be glad of your company."
He could see in her eyes that she was struggling to trust him. And he could see the instant she decided to try.
"Yes, kind sir," she said. "I too should like to test my lungs."
"Do you mock me?" he said.
"Verily I do," she said.
They walked in silence down toward the snow-burdened trees. Zoe did not assault him with questions about who or what he was, and he was grateful for it. He could not remember a time when he'd simply walked beside someone with no horrible destination in mind. He could not remember anyone being so calm in his company. Zoe seemed not to fear him at all. Once, as they were crossing the frozen river, she even bumped against him playfully. He felt the whole length of his body flush with heat. They found themselves, almost without realizing it, on the path to the lake. The dead part of the forest loomed ahead of them. The trees stood stripped and charred, as if they'd been decimated in an atomic blast. X watched as Zoe took in the grim sight. He offered to turn back. She shook her head no, like it was something she knew she had to overcome. To distract herself, she began singing.
"Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Verily, 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 life is but a dream."
"Even I know that tune," said X. "Yet I think you have misrepresented the words." Zoe laughed.
"Have I?
I don't think so." Again she gave him a little bump with her hip, and again he felt heat ripple through him. When they reached the lake, Zoe walked directly to the hole that Stan had made, as if to convince herself that she hadn't dreamed at all. X trailed after her. The hole had mostly frozen over. It looked like a scab that was healing. X wanted to pull Zoe away, wanted to protect her from the memories he knew would be sinking like pins into her brain. She spoke before he could conceive of a plan.
"So Stan really did know my father," she said. "That disgusting reptile knew my father. I thought he was lying when he said they were friends."
X searched for something suitable to say. He was so unused to talking that forming even the simplest sentence felt like building a wall. Every word was a stone he had to weigh in his hands.
"Stan is poison," X said carefully. "You must not let a single syllable he uttered into your blood."
Zoe nodded, but he could see that she was distracted and had not truly heard him.
"You'd think that once my dad died," she said, "he couldn't disappoint me any more."
She stopped and kicked at the ice with the tip of a snowshoe.
"There goes that theory."
X saw both hurt and anger in her. They were like competing storms.
"Yet you loved your father?" he said. "Or the disappointments would not pain you?"
Zoe hesitated just long enough that X felt his cheeks redden and wished he hadn't spoken.
"I loved him," she said. "Sometimes I think I loved him just enough to screw me up for the rest of my life."
X was silent a moment.
"You do not seem..."
You do not seem screwed up to me, he said.
Zoe laughed.
Get to know me, she said.
This time X spoke without thinking.
Would that I could, he said.
Zoe frowned and turned away. X wondered if it was because he'd reminded her that he would eventually have to leave. He decided it was better that she not forget it. It was better that neither of them forget. She was staring down at the ice now. The edge of the hole was speckled, decorated almost, with Stan's blood. Zoe shivered and straightened up again.
There's other stuff that Stan said, she said. I can't stop hearing it in my head.
He said he heard my dad died in some goddamn cave and that we just left him there.
More poison, X said.
No, said Zoe. It's true. There was another silence, and because the wind had quieted, it felt deeper somehow. X waited. Zoe began to tell him about her father, about the morning she woke up to find him gone, about the search for his body. She seemed surprised that the story flowed out of her so freely. I was pissed when I realized he'd gone caving without me, she said. I mean, it wasn't just our thing. It was our only thing. If he thought I wasn't ready to go caving in the snow or whatever, he should have waited for me. He should have trained me. We had one thing. How hard is it to keep one thing sacred? Zoe stopped for a second. X didn't know if she would continue. I figured he'd gone up to Polebridge, she said at last. There are two really tough caves up there, Black Teardrop and Silver Teardrop. So about 20 of us helped the cops look for him. It was insanely cold. My friends Val and Dallas came. They don't even like each other, but they pretended to because I was so freaked out. Dallas brought a big jug of this disgusting, like, weightlifter shake that he said would give us the strength of 1,000 badasses. I refused to drink it. Zoe paused. Jonah came too. I mean, it was nuts that he was there. Some therapist told my mother it was a good idea. The kid was still 7, and he was up in the mountains looking for his dead dad. Zoe fell silent again. I'm sorry, she said. You don't want to hear all this.
I do, said X.
Zoe searched his eyes to see if he was telling the truth.
It's a horrible story, she said. Perhaps telling it will take away some of its power, he said.
She nodded and continued. X didn't recognize all the words. Some swam past him in schools like exotic fish. Still, he felt Zoe's pain seep into his chest and become his own. We searched around Silver Teardrop first, she said. We didn't find anything. The caves up there both have super steep caverns. Just straight, like 100-foot drops, so nobody actually went inside. But at Black Teardrop, we found the rope my dad had used to lower himself down. One end was tied around a tree. The other just kind of disappeared into the cave. She looked at X and paused. Jonah was the one who found the rope. He had this happy little kid look on his face, you know. He was like, I found him, I found him. Zoe turned away from X now. Then Jonah saw the blood on the end of the rope, and all of a sudden he dropped the thing like it was a snake and started crying. Zoe stared up at the sky. I took the weightlifter shake from Dallas and chugged the thing, she said. I ended up puking all over the place. Attractive, right? X could find no words to offer. Your father, he said, when the silence had become uncomfortable. He had fallen into the cave. He must have stopped to take a picture while he was rappelling down, said Zoe. He probably wanted me to see some ice formation or something. That's actually the part that...
She couldn't finish the sentence. You know, because he was doing it for me. And it would have been okay.